From the Berkshires to the Sound, from wherever you live in MLB America, this is Inside the Parker. You give us 22 minutes and we'll give you the scoop on Major League Baseball. Now here's Baseball Hall of Fame voter number 86, Rob Parker.
Welcome into the podcast. I'm Rob Parker, your host. And what a show we have in store for you today. We'll talk with Tom Verducci from Fox and the MLB Network. He'll get us caught up on the negotiations. Also, great baseball writer Bob Clappish from the Newark Star-Ledger. He drops by. And a special treat, we'll talk with Doc Ellis III. That's right, the son of the former pitcher Doc Ellis. That and much more. But first, let's get it kicked off with Getting Robbed.
To lead off, it's Getting Robbed.
And keep him up.
Rob's hot take on the three biggest stories in Major League Baseball. Number three.
Say it isn't so. Aubrey Huff, the former Major League star, is at it again. This time on social media, and I just can't get it. He was critical of the government and medical people about the lockdown in the country because of the coronavirus. And went to some extremes to say, and I quote, that he would rather die of coronavirus than wear a mask and live in fear. And Huff just went on to rip people for living in fear and wearing masks, and said that he would go into stores and he would refuse to wear a mask, and it was against his rights as an American citizen, and so on and so on. And obviously he has his own opinion, but this is another point of why Huff was disinvited to the reunion of the 2010 San Francisco Giants World Series championship team. Huff continues to make all kinds of noise, and I understand why an organization would rather not. This is not what they're looking for, this kind of negative publicity. So for people who thought maybe the Giants were ridiculous in not inviting him to the celebration of the 2010 championship, I think you just found out the reason why.
Number two.
I know people were shaking in their boots when they saw the report that between 6 and 8 owners were so frustrated with where the negotiations were going that they were going to say, just let's forget it, let's not have a season. And of course, the commissioner would need two-thirds of the owners to ratify any kind of agreement with the players' union. But I don't really think that the owners, even those 6 or 8 who probably were frustrated when they even talked about it, were serious about the idea of not having a season. I just don't believe it. They know what kind of financial damage it would do to the sport. And let's not forget, baseball just signed a new deal with TBS and Turner for $1 billion. So the last thing that the owners want to do is damage the product to where that deal wouldn't be worth nearly as much money. So I get the frustration, but just relax. Deep down, I believe the owners and the players want a season.
Number one.
Thank goodness. I know there's no deal done yet, but the bottom line is they're talking. They met face to face. That's what we wanted to hear. You know, without meeting, there's no way the deal can get done. But the commissioner, Rob Manfred, and the union chief, Tony Clark, they did meet. There's some framework going on. That's all we could be happy about. And, you know, with the meeting, there is a chance that a deal will be done. Baseball could start as early as July 19th, and then we could have maybe even expanded playoffs a little bit. But we got to get a Major League Baseball season in. So this is good news for everyone in Baseball America. Good for the players, good for the ownership, and good for the fans. And no doubt about it. So movement has happened. We have to feel optimistic. It looked bleak just days ago, back on Monday, but now there's a ray of hope. And I don't know about you, but I feel good. I think we'll have baseball.
Here comes the big interview. Listen and learn.
Oh, it's so good.
All right, let's welcome into the podcast one of baseball's finest analysts, Tom Verducci, of course, with Fox Sports and the MLB Network, a guy I've known for a long time and admired. Tom, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me, Rob.
So we got some movement, Tom. I think that's all. You know, you can't get a deal if you don't meet face to face and try to hammer out things. Where are we on this?
I think we're talking about the framework of a deal. Now, it's not a done deal, but at least now there is, let's say there's territory where both sides can agree on. And I think the big change here, number one, as you mentioned, face-to-face meetings finally, right? I mean, the two sides have been communicating via electronically for so long, but Rob Manfred went out and saw Tony Clark in Arizona. And the big other change is they finally crossed the bridge to offering players 100% of prorated pay. Determination is how many games will be played, but the players were adamant from day one. They were not taking what they called the second pay cut, and the owners kept coming up with other proposals. This was the first time they said, okay, we're giving you 100% of your salary on a per-game basis.
Let me say this, Tom. This is the only part that I don't get. And I respect the union. They've worked really hard to get what they have. They have the best union in the country, way better than the other sports, and they've sacrificed and done things. But in a pandemic, it looks so bad to me, the optics of everybody else taking pay cuts and furloughs and 40 million people out of work, and the baseball players, you know, just wouldn't budge. Am I wrong?
Well, no. I mean, that's the way I think a lot of fans look at this, especially when you think about, 40 million people filed unemployment claims since the pandemic broke. So there's a lot of people out there sacrificing and suffering. And for a sport with an average salary of $4.4 million, it's hard for people to wrap their arms around the position the players took. But, you know, again, the disagreement between the owners and players was so deep, they couldn't agree on what they agreed on back in March. Because back then they did have an agreement, and the players took that to mean that that covered even if games were played in empty ballparks. And the owners were saying, well, wait a second. No, I mean, we need to now talk about how we're going to pay players in the face of no fans in the ballpark. But I will say this, Rob, that the players were galvanized. They found their voice here. After years of talking about things like free agent compensation, pension plans, economic systems, this was easy for players to rally around. They're talking about taking money out of their paychecks, right? Everybody can relate to that. And I think for me, for the first time in a long time, they were solid on that position. And I think they probably surprised the owners a little bit with how solid they were on that front.
Our guest is Tom Verducci, of course, baseball analyst for Fox Sports and MLB Network. The idea that there would not have been baseball would have damaged the sport itself and hurt the players if there was no – obviously, they would have lost salaries for 2020. And then it would be hard-pressed to look at, say, like a guy like Mookie Betts, who was going to be a free agent looking for a big deal, a $400 million deal. All bets would have been off if there was no baseball. Am I right?
100%. In fact, I've been saying that all along. What I've been saying is that the lack of a season, like no agreement whatsoever and no baseball, so you'd be talking about 17 months where baseball is dark. That, to me, all along has been the greatest incentive to get an agreement, because the downside is enormous. You're not just talking about losing games in 2020. You're talking about losing revenues in 2021 and 2022. There's a compounding effect. How the heck do teams go out there and sell sponsorships and advertising when no game's been played for 17 months? You know, the downside is enormous. And it was last month I talked to a major league executive who's been through all the labor wars. When everything looked really, really bleak and both sides were, you know, playing the PR game and saying nasty things about one another. And he said the same thing. He said they will reach an agreement because they have to reach an agreement. So I'm with you on that. That the downside to this is like standing over a cliff and wondering if it's going to hurt if you're going to jump. Well, yeah, they knew it was going to hurt big time if they jumped off the cliff.
And here's the other part. I know people in other sports, Tom, they love to rail on baseball. Baseball's dying, this and that. And the facts just remain that baseball's had growth 17 years in a row financially. Last year was their greatest year ever, $11 billion in revenue. The sport has never been healthier. We just went through 26 years of labor peace up until this thing here, Tom. And then on top of that, in the midst of this, they signed a billion-dollar deal with Turner for baseball in the future. I mean, and we saw three players last year get huge contracts, including Mike Trout, $420 million. So baseball was riding a wave until this situation.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that because, you know, this whole thing, baseball is dying. I mean, a lot of people think that because they're using old metrics. Like, if you're going to TV ratings, I mean, look at the Oscars, look at the Emmy, any kind of award show or big-time TV show, because there's so many darn channels and choices out there, the ratings are nothing of what they were in the 80s and 90s. I mean, that's just silly. You can't measure it just on that alone. Attendance, yeah, it's dropped slightly the last 7 years, but as you mentioned, their revenues are going up because they're finding more and more ways to generate revenues. You know, people are consuming baseball in more ways by more people than ever in the history of the sport. So, yes, it's very healthy, and one reason it's very healthy, Rob, is because it's the king of live content. And that's the coin of the realm in the entertainment world now. And especially now, we're talking the next few months here where no movie studio and TV studio can crank out any new content because of the pandemic. You know, baseball will be able to, I don't want to say have the floor to itself, but in terms of live content, man, you're talking about more than 2,000 games a year, now an expanded postseason. That's what sells in today's world, and baseball has that.
No doubt about it. His name is Tom Verducci, one of the best in the business. Tom, thanks for joining the podcast. Appreciate you.
Hey, my pleasure, Rob. Thank you.
It's time for the Pocket Protector Central. The analytic numbers you need to know. Well, maybe.
Anthony Masterson is his name. BS Analytics is his game. What do you got for me, Anthony?
Well, Rob, the news surrounding baseball hasn't been exactly rosy lately, with each passing day seemingly getting farther and farther away from anything resembling a legitimate season. Now, Commissioner Manfred can implement a 50-game his hand be played, so should that occur, what could we potentially see in terms of a postseason? Last year, through the season's first 50 or so games, the AL division leaders were the ones who took the top spots, the Yankees, the Twins, and Astros. The plucky Rays would have made the playoffs in a 50-game season last year as well, the same way they did through a full 162 games, though their wild card opponent would have been the eventual third-place Texas Rangers, not the Oakland A's. And the NL, a whole different story. The 50-game division leaders were the Phillies, Cubs, and Dodgers, with only L.A. taking the division at the end of the year, and the Phillies and Cubs missing the playoffs completely. Atlanta and Milwaukee still would have made the postseason, though the eventual World Series champion Nationals were at their famous low water mark of the season, a 19-31 start, second worst in the league, only better than the Marlins. Now the rest, thankfully for Nats fans everywhere, is history. What could 50 games bring us this year? It's anybody's guess.
And what that ball is.
It was a big week in the big leagues.
Who's up? Who's up?
I don't believe it! My, oh my!
Is it foul or is it fair? And now, here's ShadowLeague.com MLB insider, J.R. Gamble.
All right, J.R., until this point, is it foul or fair to say that it's the player's fault that a deal hadn't been struck with Major League Baseball?
That's foul.
That is a foul ball.
Manfred's been mostly safe since he took over for Bud Selig as MLB commissioner and has prospered and had peace for the most part. But Manfred's faced with the toughest challenge as commissioner because the owners aren't budging and neither are the players. He's hired and paid by the owners, which makes it complicated, and the players aren't very happy. He's walking a tightrope. Andrew McCutchen's video depicted MLB owners as father figures who wanted the players to accept whatever they dished out. It's reported about six owners don't want to play, and others don't like the way Manfred is negotiating. He's also not confident that the 2020 season will happen. If the league would give them full prorated salaries, a deal would probably come. But Manfred needs a way to make it happen. Anything else is going to be seen as disingenuous, and players' time is running out. He doesn't want a lost system on his watch.
Take out the papers in the trash.
It's time for Trash Talk Twitter. Your chance to trash anyone or anything in Major League Baseball.
This week's winner is Miami Mando. That's right, at LakersKane305. He writes this: I'm trashing one guy and one guy only, Robert D. Manfred Jr. And don't even speculate on what the D stands for. This buffoon is in way over his head and single-handedly ruined the sport that I've loved since I was 6 years old. All right, if you want to be a winner like Miami Mando, make sure you hit me up on at Rob Parker FS1 on Twitter, and you indeed could win a New Era snapback baseball cap just like Miami Mando for his hot take.
When Rob was a newspaper columnist, he lived by this motto: if I'm writing, I'm ripping. Let's bring in a writer or broadcaster, old or new.
All right, let's welcome into the podcast Bob Clappish, one of the best baseball writers in this country from the Newark Star Ledger, and also MLB national columnist at the Bleacher Report. Clap, what's happening?
Rob, been a long time, man. How are you?
Doing great, even better, because we got some movement on baseball. And Clap, obviously there's still a ways to go before an official deal is done, but you got to be optimistic from the stuff that you heard on Wednesday and where this was headed.
Yeah, look, it's been two and a half months of terrible news. I mean, baseball couldn't have suffered any more damage to its reputation. So any glimmer of progress is like a gift from the gods. So, you know, a part of me was thinking that there was not going to be a season. I mean, I was starting to wonder if they would be able to just break through this impasse, this logjam, and it looks like maybe we have some hope. You know, next couple of days I can iron out some obstacles. There are still some obstacles, but at least we have a possibility of a season getting underway by the third week of July, and that's good news.
Clap, let's be honest. If there were no season, the damage done with fans, when you consider the landscape we're in, where people, 40 million people, applied for unemployment benefits and people have been furloughed and let go all over the country. And had this not been able to get done, people would have looked at baseball and said, wait a minute, billionaires and millionaires arguing over, you know, splitting the revenue, and we had a summer with no baseball. How much damage would it have done?
Oh, Rob, I think the damage has already been done. I mean, even if there is an abbreviated schedule that's agreed upon, and we do see baseball in July for 2 months and a hurry-up postseason. I mean, there's no question that baseball's place in this country has suffered because of the vicious infighting and, you know, the lack of self-awareness and the realize, as you said, that given what's going on in this country, you know, social unrest, unemployment, millions sick or infected, hundreds of thousands dead, so much of it, you know, baseball could have addressed or at least helped. And the fact that the two sides couldn't come together until today, hopefully, really speaks to how divided the sport is and how broken it is. It was just an awful stretch for this game. So I think there's some fans, you know, in the short term are not going to come back. Now, if it had not, if the season still collapses, if it can't get together over the, you know, in this final stretch, then, you know, I would say that soccer has a good chance of catching and passing baseball on the national stage. That's how damaging this episode has been.
Say it isn't so. Oh, my God. His name is Bob Clappish, of course, baseball writer for the Newark Star Ledger and national columnist at the Bleacher Report. Baseball, though, coming into this, which was the weirdest part, was 26 years of labor peace, 17 years of growth in revenue, and last year, $11 billion in revenue. And on the heels of it, Clap, you know, we saw the TBS Turner deal for $1 billion. So baseball's never been healthier. Why don't these sides trust each other? And here's the other part that tickled me when the players were saying that they wanted the owners to open up the books. And I said to myself, to show that they've paying people $35 and $40 million a year, like the idea of it is like they're getting shortchanged or they're not making any money. I found it to be funny.
There's a great deal of money coming into the sport, as you said, and there's also a great deal of distrust. You're right that there's money flowing into the game, but that's TV money, and the players suspect that the owners are hiding it, burying it, and they were overstating their losses this season and what they could the losses that they could suffer. you know, there's no doubt that the revenue is at an all-time high, but it's also true that the sport has suffered declining attendance in each of the last four seasons. And that's the challenge here, is not only finding a way to make peace and get the game back on the field, but B, appealing to the next generation of young fans. They're not watching baseball. Baseball fans are older, and eventually they're going to age out, they're going to pass on, and you've got to replace it with somebody. And those young fans are either watching the NBA, they're watching football, they're watching soccer, and believe me, these last 2 months have not helped sell the brand to a much broader audience, and that's what's really in front of Rob Manfred right now. How do we grow this game in a meaningful way for the future?
Speaking of Rob Manfred, the commissioner, you know, of course, he's the lead guy. He's out front. People have been bashing him big time. But this sport has been through this. He's not the first commissioner that has to deal with this. This is just a part of the job, isn't it? When I look at what he's done or what's been on, we've had work stoppages in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s. You know what I mean? Like, for on and on and on, no matter who's the commissioner. How much blame does he really get?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, it's a thankless job, you know, trying to be the commissioner holding and trying to get all the moving parts working in sync. But this commissioner, whether it's true or not, whether it's perceived or real, there's a sense in baseball that he really doesn't love the game. He's just a lawyer. He's a businessman. He's a front man for the owners. Look, say what you want about Bud Selig. I mean, he loved the game. I really think he loved baseball in his soul. I don't know if that's true of Rob Manfred. I think he's a very, very smart guy. He's a brilliant man. He's an Ivy-educated labor lawyer, has all the credentials on paper, but I don't think he's relatable to the players in the sense that he truly loves baseball the way some of his predecessors did, like Bud Selig. Now, it's true that he has done he's done good work enhancing the game's revenue, there's no doubt, and he's made some necessary changes to the rules. He's doing his best to modernize the sport. But at the very core, does he love the sport? Does he love the players? Does he get it that the players are the oxygen, the true blood of the game? That remains to be seen. I don't know. The perception is that he doesn't.
Clap, one last thing on the future and the health of baseball. I talked to gambling people, and you know, with gambling now going to be, you know, legal in most states, and people going to be able to bet, even some people think at ball games, you know, as the games are going on. I'm told that baseball will be the bigger beneficiary of gambling on games, even bigger than football. A, there's more games, and B, there are more things to gamble on, like at bats, whether a guy strikes out, whether a guy hits a fly ball. Like, there's all these other angles. Have you heard much about that? And that could be a new revenue source that could help baseball moving forward.
That is you've just touched on I think the new frontier, maybe the final frontier. That's how baseball is going to save itself, Rob. And we could spend hours talking about it. Because you're right, because baseball, the old-fashioned way, is just having a hard time keeping fans' attention span. I mean, they have mostly rejiggered the ballparks to make it an entertainment experience. There's food, there's all kinds of widened concourses, other things to do during the game. But ultimately, people need to watch the game the way that they pay attention to football. And the way to do it, ultimately, is by gambling, is by betting on at-bats and strikeouts and run totals. And I think, ultimately, that's how you bring the next generation in and get them to lock in on the sport. Because right now the sport is too slow and it's too boring for most younger fans.
All right. He is Bob Clappish, a guy I worked with back in the 80s at the Daily News in New York. A guy I admired and copied my baseball style after. Bob, I appreciate you. You know that.
You're giving away our age, Robin. Thank you, man. I appreciate you having me on.
No doubt. We'll talk to you soon. Stay well, you and your family, Clap.
All right. Thank you, Rob.
Now it's time for some Diamond Dust with Wish TV's Phil Sanchez.
Out of here!
He played baseball in college. Now hear his MLB knowledge.
Overshadowed by the disastrous news coming out of Major League Baseball is a story that any other year would be huge news. On Monday, Rob's New York Yankees and Major League Baseball appealed a ruling by a judge ordering a letter from MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred to the Yankees GM Brian Cashman. Now, according to various reports, the letter details an investigation into possible sign stealing by the Yankees in the 2015-2016 season. The letter allegedly points to the Yankees improperly using a dugout phone to call back to the replay room in an effort to steal opponent signs. Now, this all comes, of course, after the Houston Astros were seriously punished for using cameras to steal signs back in 2017 and 2018. That scandal resulted in the ousting of Astros manager A.J. Hinch, Red Sox manager Alex Cora, and future Mets manager Carlos Beltran. Now, whether or not the letter is released remains to be seen, but the Astros players, of course, having a field day with the news. Many took to social media to troll the Yankees, specifically Aaron Judge, who was very outspoken about the Astros. Now, baseball has way bigger concerns right now, but this has the potential to be the perfect example of the old cliche, those who live in glass houses should not throw stones.
Now bring in the closer.
Strike one.
Strike two.
Strike three.
He's out.
Here's why MLB is better than the NFL or NBA, and it isn't even close.
The reason baseball is better than the NBA and the NFL is because of great stories like this one. It was 50 years ago, a week ago, that Doc Ellis, pitching for the Pittsburgh Pirates, reportedly pitched a no-hitter on LSD. We welcome in the son of the late Doc Ellis, Doc Ellis III. Doc, tell us, is that story true or not?
It's all the way true for me, just growing up with my dad and seeing certain things that he's done and his antics I was able to witness after his playing career. He's always spoke his mind and was no nonsense. And just needing that help every game. You know, the greenies he's mentioned before in documentaries and stuff, just his fear of failing and wanting to stay there. You know, he was able to get a 12-year career. So I know he was about his business and trying to stay at that peak level.
But let's just be honest. I know a lot of people, whenever that comes up, and it was the 50th anniversary, so that's why it's you know, reason to mention it, but your dad was a hell of a pitcher, and for people just shouldn't remember Doc Ellis just for the supposedly LSD game, correct?
Oh, yeah. In L.A., growing up with Chet Brewer, he was an old brother that tried to get some of the young blacks in the area to have interest in baseball, and he took a liking to my father and developed an array of pitches, about four or five pitches, and like I said, he was able to maintain a nice career in, you know, 70, 71, the no-hitter, and just the all-star start with Vida Blue, another black pitcher back in the day, and just that all-black starting lineup, some of those things. He also, in 76, you know, he got a ring with the Yanks, so he did his thing.
No doubt. Thanks for sharing some memories of your late dad, Doc Ellis III, joining us here on Inside the Parker. Thanks so much, Doc.
Oh, anytime, Rob.
In the words of New York TV legend, the late Bill Jorgensen, thanking you for your time this time until next time. Rob Parker, out.
He can't get it. This could be an Inside the Parker.
See you next week. Same bat time, same bat station.